At least where Coruscant is concerned, you and I are closer than Telesburg at the moment, she pointed out aloud. And even with the overwater links, the semaphore between here and there, or from here to a race store for that matter, works for us now, not the group of four. We can get dispatches to Manchir a lot quicker from Chiraeth.
That helps, Caleb agreed. In fact, as far as the semaphore's concerned, we're actually better placed here than we would be in Telesburg, since Chiraeth's much closer to our geographic center. It's not the same as being there to keep an eye on things in Coruscant myself, though. And for that matter, I'm none too delighted at having to send them overland through Zebediah, even if we did personally vet the semaphore managers, he added a bit sourly.
No, it's not the same as being there, she acknowledged.
On the other hand, they both knew why he wasn't still in Manchir, personally overseeing the restive princedom's incorporation into the Empire, and completely leaving aside all of the personal reasons she was glad he wasn't, including the one which was just beginning to affect her figure. The cold-blooded political calculation which had brought him home to Chiraeth seemed to be proving out in practice. Charlian wasn't foolish enough to think Earl Anvil Rock and Earl Tartarian were going to keep the lid nailed down on the conquered princedom's many and manifold boiling resentments forever. The spontaneous street demonstrations in Manchir, and quite a few of them truly were spontaneous, she admitted, completely independent of the activities of people like Patrick Hainry, were an ominous indication of heavy weather just over the horizon. But it was obvious from Merlin's snarks that it would have been even worse if Caleb had remained in Coruscant. At least, unlike Caleb, Anvil Rock and Tartarian were also Coruscantians themselves, and at least they were governing Coruscant, officially at any rate, as the regents of Prince Divan, not in the name of a foreign conqueror. Everyone might still see that foreign conqueror lurking just behind Divan's empty throne, yet it still gave them a degree of legitimacy in Coruscantian eyes, which Viceroy General Churman simply could not have enjoyed. Of course, that was its own jar of worms, and a particularly squirmy jar it was, too.
I wish I didn't sympathize with Iris as much as I do, she thought grimly. And I know I can't afford to let that sympathy influence me. But I also know what it's like to have your father murdered. I know exactly what that can do to someone. And however much I may have loathed and hated Hector Dakin, he was her father. She loved him as much as I loved mine, and she's never going to forgive Caleb for having him assassinated, any more than I ever forgave Hector for buying my father's murder.
Charlian Armok was only too well aware of the bitterly ironic parallels between herself and Iris Dakin, and despite her own burning hatred for Hector of Coruscant, she truly did feel a deep, pain-laced sympathy for Hector's surviving orphaned children. And if there was one person on the face of Safehold who would never underestimate just how dangerous a mere girl's blazing determination to avenge that murder could truly be, it was Charlian of Chisholm.
Which only makes me worry even more about Lartroth, Stormkeep, and all of their damned friends and neighbors. If only we could just go ahead and arrest them all for what we know they're doing.
That, however, was the one thing they absolutely couldn't do. Caleb had been right when he'd decided he couldn't simply replace conquered princes and nobles with people who would inevitably be seen as his favorites. No, he had to leave legitimate nobles who had sworn fealty to him in place, unless and until he had incontrovertible proof the princes and nobles in question had been guilty of treason. Which, since they couldn't possibly present evidence from the snarks in any open court, meant all they could do was to keep a wary eye on what Merlin had christened the Northern Conspiracy. And, if she were honest, she wished even more passionately that they could move openly even against the street agitators. She supposed there really wasn't any reason they couldn't arrest commoners on suspicion, assuming there'd been some way to identify them to General Cherman, or to Corin Garvey. But just how did one go about identifying them to anyone outside the inner circle without raising all sorts of potentially disastrous questions? And even leaving aside that not-so-minor consideration, did they really want to start down that road? She didn't doubt there might come a time when they'd have no choice, but, as Caleb had just pointed out, it was always tempting, and seldom wise, to succumb to expediency. As far as she was concerned, she'd prefer to delay that time when they had no choice for as long as possible. Of course, there were some other weighty, purely pragmatic arguments in favor of their current hands-off approach as well. The database of agitators Merlin had Owl building continued to grow steadily, and there were many advantages in letting that proceed undisturbed, up to a point at least. Not only would they know where to find their organized enemies when the moment finally came, but letting the other side do its recruiting undisturbed also served to draw the most dangerous opposition together in one group, to give them a single target they could decapitate with a single strike. And, she reflected, sifting through Owl's reconnaissance take, as Merlin calls it, helps us evaluate why someone joined the resistance. I never realized how valuable that could be until he pointed it out. Knowing what motivates people to actively oppose you is incredibly useful when it comes to evaluating the effectiveness of your policies, or how other people perceive those policies at any rate. And it doesn't hurt to be able to judge the character of your opponents either. Not everyone who joins up with people like Henry and Wyman belongs in the same basket with them. There are good and decent people on the other side. People who genuinely think what they're doing is the right thing, what God wants them to do. It's hard enough remembering that even with the proof right in front of us. Without it, I don't think I'd be able to remember at all when sentencing time rolls around.